You're listening to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like geography, the visual arts, performing arts, storytelling, and literature. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're talking with composer, musician, and sound artist Holly Herndon, whose most recent full-length album, Proto, was released in 2019. We're also talking with Matt Dryhurst, a musician, researcher, and artist who also teaches at NYU's Clive Davis Institute of Music, the Strelka Institute, and the European Graduate School, and hosts discussions with figures shaping 21st century culture on the Interdependence podcast.
Thank you all so much for introducing us to this brave new world of machine learning digital musicians. When I was looking at some of the information on your website about how you got to this point with Holly Plus, one of the things that jumped out to me is that you figured out how to make your process more environmentally responsible so that you have a lower environmental impact.
If you go back a few years, there were definitely a lot of stories talking specifically about the energy consumption of machine learning applications. And then this year, the energy consumption of blockchain applications. We actually had a guest, Dr. Jonathan Kumi, on our podcast to deal with this. He's a scholar, kind of the global expert in technological energy consumption.
Specifically when it comes to large-scale networked systems.
Exactly. And the same things were said about the original internet. I think he made his name from debunking claims that office internet consumption was going to boil the oceans. Now, of course, when you're talking about Bitcoin energy consumption, Bitcoin does consume a lot of energy. Energy consumption needs to be decoupled from the source of energy, because I don't think energy consumption is necessarily a bad thing. It's about what you burn or what you don't burn, more importantly, to produce that energy. We are working with NFTs, which work on the Ethereum blockchain. But the good news about that, which I like to remind people who often don't know very much about this, is that NFTs actually produce no marginal energy spend in the Ethereum network. The Ethereum network consumes as much energy as it does. The vast bulk of that energy is put to financial applications that have very little to do with the arts. NFTs don't add any extra energy to that. But in terms of this project more generally, we haven't been focusing too much, I think, on the energy consumption of it.
But I would also add, I mean, a lot of this has to do with scale. By just focusing on my own voice and the data sets that are pretty small in comparison to a corporate data set that would just be scraping the internet for any kind of voice of a particular category, you know, we're dealing with very small data sets. And so because it's such a smaller scale, it's using so much less electricity.
When we're dealing with music too, one other thing that is worth pointing out is our base point at the moment is that people ought to make their living by flying on planes across the earth. And the one thing that everybody's cool with is printing music on literal discs of oil that are then shipped across the earth with carbon-consuming aeroplanes, you know. And so I think that the conversation when it comes to artists experimenting with digital technology can often be distorted as being somehow more deleterious to the environment than things we already do, which I just don't think is true. That being said, in terms of dealing with any of these machine learning systems or these kind of blockchain systems, we're all for renewable energy sources. And to be honest, there's kind of a consensus amongst people who take this stuff seriously moving toward that. So I think in a few years' time, that conversation will look far more positive.
In a technical sense, you are running this project on a server. There's a server somewhere. Just out of curiosity, where is that server located, or multiple servers?
It is a Google server.
So you're using commercial cloud services to host this and run your code. And I presume that also lets your collaborative coding group all contribute pushes to the code base. Is that right?
Exactly.
Exactly. And we're also paying for those server costs out of pocket just because we care about this project and want people to be able to use it.
Initially, we started out with commercial cloud. One, because it's more cost effective. But number two, because you can never presuppose demand. This project has been out for a couple of weeks and we have a couple of months of continuous music that's been created through it. At one point, there were 18 hits to the server a second.
Oh, that's a lot.
That could have gone even crazier. And there's nothing to say that tomorrow a YouTuber doesn't make a video saying, look at this crazy AI thing. And then, you know, so for the time being, we're using Google Cloud infrastructure. Yeah. That's the safe way.
Mm-hmm. if the larger community out there was going to be uploading stuff to have Holly Plus render these tracks, you don't want to have any scaling issues or have the website come crashing down.
Exactly. I mean, at a certain point, it would come crashing down, but that point's pretty far in the future.
And that's the cool thing, too, because obviously the group that we're working with, Never Before Heard Sands, they're doing never before done things, right? And so they're actually managing a lot of that cloud interaction. And I think for them, that's also something they're very, very interested in pursuing further, because this is a bit of a test case. It's a bit of a stress test of how these things would work in theory going forward. If they can make this run smoothly, that gives the green light to try other things.
You have sort of a crew of musicians and coders and technologists that you've been working with for the last 5 or 6 years, right? Is there a larger community of people doing these things that you can learn from and collaborate with?
100%. We connect with people via Twitter a lot, you know, also for the visual work that we're doing. We do a lot of GAN-created animation work. There are a ton of machine learning creative nerds online that love to share best practices and libraries, and it's actually a really cool community. Often people meet up in Discords. We subscribe to a couple Discords where we share work and just chat general strategy. It's a really cool community.
Visual artists and musicians is what you're saying.
Absolutely. It's still quite nascent. But, you know, if you want to get a project done at scale and with a deadline, which we're definitely in the mechanics of that in a way that we weren't a few years ago, it really helps to have close collaborators. But in terms of, you know, everyone from like hard researchers to just hobbyists, there's tens of thousands of people experimenting with similar things right now.
And that's why it's so cool that some of these universities and corporations have open sourced the code and the white papers and the research so that a wider community of tinkerers can play with it.
And what's cool about it too, I mean, we come from an experimental electronic music background, and we also had the good fortune of growing up in a time where you had laptops and, you know, you just put Logic on or Ableton or whatever and you tinker a little bit. We grew up with the stories of radio hobbyist hackers from like the 1950s or whatever. Like, they were the true inventors, not to inflate our own sense of importance, but like, but there is a similar vibe to this stuff. Deep diving into these Discords, you're like, wow, yeah, there's this guy in Sweden who has a strange pseudonym who just figured out something insane at night. There's a genuine kind of like citizen science component to this that I felt like we got robbed of. It's the first time I've ever actually had that experience in my adult life, and it's very exciting. To continue that analogy with like early radio, like early recording technologies, I archive everything from collaborators, from different people who are online, where I'm like, you know what? That was a breakthrough there. And I think in 30 years' time, when this stuff is just integrated and we can all sing as each other and we figured all that stuff out, that's going to be valuable. It's an interesting kind of document of a weird time. Being involved in those conversations, thinking about what to do with stuff, like what way to use this stuff would be that would be artistically interesting or technically interesting or whatever it might be, that stuff is thrilling. Sadly, also very niche at this point in time, but that's something to get out of bed for sure.
But it won't be niche for long.
No, not at all.
You said Holly Plus was sort of done learning, that she knows what she knows, and that's where she's going to stay for a while, but you may create other models. When you're doing machine learning, are there points where you require human intervention to sort of get the model back on the track where you want it? Does it take a human tweaking it, or do you just sort of create a process and then give it a ton of data?
So yeah, humans are always in the loop in this process, actually. So the Holly Plus model that we released, I think, was the sixth model that we ran. And, you know, it's really about tweaking certain weights and how the model responds to certain inputs. So it's all just really sophisticated statistical analysis. And so you can kind of weight those statistics in different ways and tweak your outcome. But that's kind of the strange misnomer of working with machine learning, is people are saying, oh, it'll replace humans and all these kind of things. It's actually such a human intensive process. You know, you have to make the data set, you have to edit and craft that data set, and then you have to train the model, and then you have to push the model into different directions, and then you edit the outcome. So it's a very human interactive experience the entire time.
We're joking, it's the least automated thing we've ever done. Coming from like Photoshop or something like that, where you're like, yeah, just crop it. The automation thing is kind of a fallacy. But I think there's also legitimacy to the concern in the sense that while we definitely enjoy the custom side of things and get a thrill from customizing things to produce maybe an idiosyncratic piece of artwork or whatever it might be, and that's what we care about, there are real concerns where it will be possible to automate a fairly good enough piece of X music, right? So when you have people who, for example, earn their living from producing music that they don't believe to be the pinnacle of artistic expression, but it makes them a living, there is cause for concern because that stuff can be automated now. While on the one hand, we're coming at this from a, yeah, you can make your own model and then weight it in this particular way to emphasize these things. That's all really cool as a creative act. But I do think that there's legitimacy to some of the displacement fears when it might just be good enough for one person at a company somewhere to say, okay, well, here's the Hans Zimmer model. I weighted it to just kind of sound like Hans Zimmer. So now anytime you need a cheap score for your movie, this will cost you $20. It's already kind of happening. And again, I feel like it's inevitable, but I feel like history is on our side and like human interest and curiosity is on our side because fundamentally the dystopian scenario where there's no room for human expression anymore and everyone just listens to crap pushed out by an algorithm somewhere, I just don't buy it. The easier it becomes to make something, the harder it becomes to distinguish yourself, and people want to distinguish themselves. But fundamentally, I think the cream always rises. And no doubt in 20 years' time, there'll be something else where people are like, this is going to ruin all music and humans are irrelevant. And it's like, okay, no, this is an old conversation, guys.
When we first started talking, you said you could take our recording from this session and by the end of the day have a singer in Craig's voice, right? You wouldn't want a singer in my voice. But, if anybody can take these audio processing tools or image processing tools and slap something together and then say, well, there you go, that's the same thing. But it sounds like you've really put a lot of thought and energy and personal investment into getting Holly Plus to be an instrument that you find appealing and aesthetic and nice to work with, that all that human investment, human interaction has made it more than something that you chop up and edit and say, okay, now we can deep fake Craig.
I want a shallow fake.
Deep real. The one thing I'll say on that is that model training information does matter. While anyone will be able to bootleg something, it's very different for me to take Craig's voice from this call or to sit with Craig in the studio for hours and hours and hours and get him to make the most comprehensive model possible. And so that's one of the bets we're making with this project is that, yeah, anyone will be able to do it, but ultimately what we imagine will happen is that you're going to have official models that are really, really high fidelity, they're really complex, and those will be preferable. That you'd rather, in a way, maybe spend the $50 or whatever to use that. And an analogy there would be like sample packs. Like in music, there is a world where you can sample anything. If you have a sampler, it's really easy. But people buy a lot of sample packs because they want the kick drum perfectly isolated. They want it in the highest fidelity, or they like that it comes from the source.
And also, just because you have the Craig model doesn't mean you will come up with the same brilliant expressions that Craig might come up with. So exactly. That's kind of the really fun thing, is that you can perform through someone else's identity. We've already seen a kind of wide range of people using the Holly Plus model, and they're so different. The things that people are coming up with, you can immediately make a judgment of which ones you prefer and the kind of the aesthetic qualities. So that's what's so exciting about it, is it really is a kind of instrument that people are using in a creative way.
On the podcast this week, we had a group on called Aletheia AI who were trying to use these kind of language models to help model characters. And so they're writing scripts and have come up with their own special sauce for coming up with characters that have these very rich dimensions to them. And that stuff's going to also be kind of crazy, because there you can imagine the bootleg will be someone who, sorry that Craig, you're being volunteered as the guinea pig here, but the bootleg will be someone who listened for 10 minutes and then comes up with a stereotypical impression of what Craig's personality might be. But the high fidelity model will be most likely writers and people who know somebody fleshing out this personality, so that when you're talking to them through a game or something like that, what comes back is believable.
I'm reflecting about all the artists who are going to be coming after you, and what a blessing it is to have you all who have technical skills, academic skills, artistic skills, and legal skills to figure this all out. Those are not intersecting domains.
Yeah, I mean, not to be hyperbolic, but I feel like it is truly experimental in every facet. That is both exhausting and really exciting.
But I feel like that's kind of our role. My joke is our role in the ecosystem is to do things that way bigger people can't do for cheap. we end up taking all the risk. We're like spending money and like Holly's putting her personality out there and who knows. And I have noticed we've had quite a few followers from major labels in the past little while. It's like, okay, let's see how they do. We're the free R&D wing for the wider industry. But at the same time, it's cool because it's the work and it's kind of what we do and it's engaging. I have no doubt there'll be different tweaks. We'll see how the auction stuff goes. We'll see how the approval stuff goes. I have no doubt in the next few years, we'll start to see bigger names who, to be honest, have a lot to gain and to lose from not addressing this issue, adopting most likely very similar logics to us should this work out and we not end up in some crazy hot water we didn't realize that we were getting ourselves into.
Holly, Matt, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today about your various projects. We really appreciate your time and enthusiasm.
Thank you. This has been really fun.
And if you would like more information about Holly Herndon and these various projects, you can visit hollyherndon.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.